for argument is 20-2314, Shockwave Medical versus Cardiovascular System. Mr. McPhee, welcome back. Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. This appeal is, if anything, I think even more straightforward than the last. There's just one obviousness theory at issue in terms of the base references, and the Board's decision based on that theory suffers from at least three independent errors, any one of which would be sufficient basis to reverse. In brief, the first error, the Board's failure to satisfy the claimed series connection element as properly construed. Second, involving the surface area element. And the third error is the Board's failure to provide a proper analysis of motivation to combine, expectation of success for its proposed combinations, all of which involve at least three or four distinct embodiments.
So starting with the series. At the outset, the difference, some difference between this and the last appeal was in the last appeal, at least a major issue involved claim construction, where our standard of review is much less deferential than for all of the other issues, including all of those that you're presenting here, right?
Well, I would say, in fact, the first issue, a series connection, the Board really failed to understand the scope of that claim, which is apparent as you look at the Board's decision. And I'd like to start there if I could.
Okay, sure. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes, if you look at the claim language, again, I think it's helpful just to look at that first page of the blue brief. You look at the last element of the claim, which is where our focus is, and it's very detailed. It requires not just electrodes, but electrode pairs connected to each other in a particular way. It requires a first arc across the first electrode pair, a second arc on the second electrode pair, and with these arcs, thereby creating a series connection running from the first electrode in the first electrode pair, the second electrode in the second second pair. So what does CSI do with this? What does the Board do with this? Well, despite the detail in the actual claim language, what CSI does is tries to collapse this element into the simplistic concept of a simple wired circuit in series, like an old-fashioned string of Christmas lights with each component wired to the next one in a loop. CSI's brief actually refers to this element as the in-series limitation, even though that term appears nowhere in the claim. And the Board's decision uncritically accepts CSI's error, with the decision relying heavily on a finding that the prior art, quote, suggests electrically wiring electrodes in series.
Can you give us a cite to the appendix on that you're talking about now? Board decision?
Yes, I can, Your Honor. It might take me a second. I might get it on the reply.
Okay.
But the point is, relying on this idea that the prior art suggests electrically wiring electrodes in series, that misses the point. The series connection element is not satisfied by a mere collection of components that are electrically connected in series. And we just saw that in the claim language. In fact, there's no dispute, I think, that Kunis, which is what the Board relies upon as satisfying the series connection element, that Kunis does not disclose arcing at all, much less multiple pairs of arcing electrodes arranged in a series connection as claimed. And so the Board's reliance on Kunis as disclosing a series connection rests on what is fundamentally a mistaken interpretation of the term. So this is where the claim construction issue, I think, really comes into play, Your Honor, in response to your question. And by the way, there's no dispute that the other two references in the combination, the two Hawkins references, neither of those discloses a series connection. The Board found that Hawkins 020 does not disclose a series design at all, and no one has ever argued that this element was satisfied in Hawkins 768.
This is Judge Chen. Isn't the idea that in light of Kunis, it'd be obvious to modify Hawkins 020 so that it did provide a series connection?
Yes, that is CSI's fallback argument, and I'd like to go there now. So CSI does argue that one could, in theory, rewire Hawkins 020 to provide a series connection, and they base that on Kunis and sort of the background understanding of conventional series circuits. But, of course, saying that one could make a change – is fundamentally different from proving that one of skill in the art would actually be motivated to do this.
Well,
to
put a little finer point on it, my understanding is the board said, first of all, it would be obvious to try because there are very, very few configurations of how you could arrange these electrode pairs, as shown in Hawkins 020. And maybe Hawkins 020 shows them in parallel, but the obvious alternative is to do it in series. And then when you look at Kunis, when Kunis talks about, well, the advantage of having it in series rather than in parallel is that it'll be less bulky. You'll just have fewer wires running through the catheter, which, as I understand it, is completely consistent with what you said in the prosecution history that you describe at page 12 to 13 of your blue brief, where before the examiner, you criticized the 020 for being overly stiff because the electrode pairs are in parallel rather than in series, and your claimed invention minimizes the number of wires running down the length of the catheter, which is the very point that Kunis is making. So that understanding of wanting to minimize the number of wires running down the length of the catheter was already known in the art, as evidenced by Kunis. So in light of the obvious to try, in light of very few options on how to arrange these things, plus what Kunis tells us about doing things in series, why wouldn't it have been obvious, or to put it differently, why isn't there substantial evidence under this deferential standard review to go ahead and affirm this fact-finding from the tribunal below that, yes, one would be motivated to do a series connection?
All good questions. I'll start by saying the obvious to try formulation is not a shortcut that sidesteps the need to supply a motivation to combine and an expectation of success, which CSI is still required to do. So even taking at face value the idea that in conventional circuits you have a few different ways of wiring things together, CSI still needs to meet its burden on that. The second issue, of course, is that we're not talking about a conventional circuit here by any stretch of imagination. We're talking about a series of components in a system with electrode pairs with gaps in them, which for most circuits would mean you have a circuit that doesn't work if you have a gap in it. In this case, in the Hawkins system, we rely on arcing in a common fluid to actually create the circuit. So it can't be the case that you simply point to, as CSI does, point to the existence of these kinds of circuits in conventional background and unthinkingly apply them to a system like Hawkins 020, which is basically what their expert does, just points to some background as well as to Kunis. And now Kunis, you asked about, in particular, I think this is another example where we need to look at what is actually cited in Kunis. So Kunis, as I said, not an arcing reference, nothing to do with shockwaves. So a question about why the person of ordinary skill is looking to Kunis in the first place to modify a very different kind of reference in Hawkins 020. But even if we could get past that, the one passage that CSI points to in Kunis as supplying some sort of motivation for the type of modification that you're describing, Judge Chen, is a passage that simply states that when you have a, quote, large number of electrodes, that this could create some bulk. Well, CSI never establishes the predicate of why Hawkins 020 has that concern. In fact, Hawkins 020 has just two electrode pairs. So even getting to Kunis, if Kunis provides a solution for someone with a large number of electrodes, well, there's no explanation for why that's even a problem with respect to the underlying Hawkins 020. There's no evidence that Hawkins needs size reduction, and actually no evidence in the record that a modification would actually achieve the size reduction CSI's expert Jensen, in his first deposition, he said, well, it wouldn't be a dramatic reduction. And then at his second deposition, he actually conceded that the modification would not reduce wire count at all at the widest point. It might actually increase bulk by making the wire a little bit thicker. So on all these points, we have, we're left with the same basic problem of having to establish some sort of motivation to combine, some expectation of success for changing what, by all counts, is a perfectly serviceable system. You need something more to get over the hump than just sort of a cursory invocation of obvious to try. I'd like to just briefly mention, if I could, I think I heard the chime, but just briefly mention this issue of multiple disparate embodiments, just because this is an error that goes to the heart of all of the combinations. We don't think that there's adequate motivation to combine, for example, Hawkins 020 with Hawkins 768 or with Kunis. But in fact, it's CSI's effort to combine all three references into a single design. It actually compounds that deficiency. And we have the Gillette case, for example, that makes this clear. Focusing on the obviousness of substitutions and differences instead of the invention as a whole is a legally improper way to make a determination of obviousness. And that's what CSI and the board did here. It's especially acute for the dependent claims, where now CSI is introducing additional embodiments from the patents. The board seemed to take the position that if the two embodiments to be combined were from a single reference, that no motivation to combine was necessary. And that's simply contrary to this court's precedent in Re Stepan, which we cited, which specifically address this issue and held that even if you have two embodiments from the same reference, a motivation to combine still needs to be supplied. In this case, the board made no attempt to do that, and we think that's just legal error. And we'll submit on the relative electrode surface area issue, and I'll reserve the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Nelson.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Mark Nelson for Appellee CSI. So jumping right into it here, the board found with respect to the limitation, thereby creating a series running from a first electrode pair to a second electrode pair, the board found that petitioner demonstrated that the combined teaching of Hawkins 020, Hawkins 768, and Kunis, quote, suggest two electrode pairs connected in series that are capable of supporting arcs across the gaps in those pairs when a single high voltage is applied. That, end quote, that's Appendix 10. Now, counsel started his argument by noting a claim construction, but as far as I can tell from the briefing, Shockwave isn't arguing for a claim construction here, and the board's finding is it based on some claim construction the board made. The board didn't resolve what it characterized as a new argument in the surreply and went ahead and found that the claim was obvious. And the board counsel also stated that Hawkins 020 was, that the board found that it was wired as a switched connection. That's not actually what the board said. The board said that a posita would have inferred that Hawkins 020 described two electrode pairs that are, quote, likely, end quote, wired individually. That's at Appendix 22. But the board also stated that Hawkins 020 does not expressly describe how the electrode pairs 34 and 36 are wired to the power supply 30. That's at Appendix 16. And so the board's finding here is based on the suggestion of these references being combined. The law here on obvious to try is a finite number of known predictable solutions and a design or market pressure to solve a problem, i.e. a reason to try the solution. And the board's decision supports that analysis and its findings with more than substantial evidence. With respect to the finite number, the dispute below was whether the connection could be an in-series connection or an in-parallel connection. And Shockwave argued, oh, no, there's a third connection that you didn't consider, a switch connection. But either way, it's a finite number of connections, either two or three. The board gave Shockwave the benefit of the doubt and went with three, but it's a finite number. Are they known? There's no dispute that Hawkins 020 teaches multiple electrode pairs and multiple arcs in an environment. Again, the board, I think, gave Shockwave the benefit of the doubt when it said they're likely wired individually, but there's no dispute that there's two electrode pairs arcing disclosed in Hawkins 020. The board credited petitioner's arguments that cited Atwater's expert admission that a series connection is a fundamental electrical configuration to connect circuit components taught in basic undergraduate engineering courses. The board also credited petitioner's experts that parallel series and switch connections were all well known. The board found that Kunis unequivocally suggested disclosing that its electrodes can be electrically connected in series or parallel. And that's at Appendix 18. The quote is unequivocally is at Appendix 27. The electrically connected portion of describing Kunis is at Appendix 18, and Appendix 808 is the Kunis reference at column 25, lines 41 to 42. The board didn't just rely on that sentence, though, contrary to counsel's statement. The board also stated at Appendix 18, Kunis describes, quote, an array of multiple electrodes simultaneously or serially deliver ablation energy to targeted tissue over a relatively large area. Kunis describes, so Kunis, like the Hawkins reference, Hawkins references, these are references that are minimally invasive medical devices that are inserted through the vasculature and have to find their way to the treatment site. And Kunis's teaching is broad. It teaches that its ablation elements are electrodes and that the ablation energy that can be used is RF energy, acoustic energy, electrical energy, magnetic energy, mechanical energy. Doesn't use the term shockwave per se, but I don't think it's disputed that shockwaves are mechanical energy. That's Appendix 18, citing Kunis 808. So turning to the predictability aspect, that's where patent owner focused a lot of its arguments here. And the board found at Appendix 20 substantial evidence that petition arguments were more persuasive, which is sort of the touchstone here of a decision that shouldn't be reversed when the board weighed the party's respective evidence and clearly stated that one side's arguments were more persuasive than the other. The board credited petitioner's argument, again citing patent owner's experts, that this is an in-series type limitation is a fundamental limitation, basic electronic principles. The board also looked at a lot of patent owner's experts' testimony. And patent owner's arguments here were all focused on that it was in an arcing environment, it was very unpredictable where particularly the arc would form. Not that it wouldn't cross over between one electrode and an electrode pair to a second electrode, but it would be unpredictable where on the first electrode the particular arc would form, and then where the path it would take to the second electrode. And patent owner argued that the electrons, and it was really focused on a molecular level, and there's a figure in, I think, that Appendix 415, that is in Dr. Jensen's brief, where it shows these electron streamers coming out. And this is at a microsecond time scale. And Shockwave analogized the unpredictability here, the alleged unpredictability, as like a lightning bolt. But that's not the situation that its expert ultimately agreed with. Because when you take this out of the molecular level and you put it at the level of controlling whether the arcs in fact will form across the electrode pairs, both experts agree that you can control arc formation by adjusting the shape of the electrodes, which would include the surface area, and the distance between them. And so to use that lightning bolt analogy, Yes, it would be unpredictable where a lightning would strike if you just take a thunderstorm and a large section of ground. But if you took a particular portion of the cloud that would represent the first electrode in an electrode pair, and you controlled its shape, and then you took a big old lightning rod and you put it right next to that first electrode by the cloud, and you controlled its shape, for example, you make it bigger. There's not unpredictability that the lightning bolt is going to strike between those two electrodes. And that's what the board ultimately found, was that the arc formation is controlled by adjusting the shape of the electrodes and the distance between them. That's exhibit, that's appendix 18. That it was basic, that it's basic electronic principles that current flow, highest current will flow across the least path of least resistance. That's at appendix 23. The board noted that patent owner's expert was inconsistent. In one place, and this is at appendix 24, he states that the effect of series connections is there is only one path to ground for electrons flowing across the electrode gaps. The current must flow across each of the electrode pairs wired in series through the same fluid. But then the board notes he reaches this conclusion even after stating in another paragraph that the detailed physics of arc formation remain unpredictable. And so the debate here, the board ultimately concludes, well, at appendix 24, current would flow across the gaps from highest current to lowest current, and that once the current starts flowing, all these streamers that, patent owner's expert was arguing would go all over and could eventually short circuit the, circuit, they would just go away. And so by controlling the shape of the electrodes and the distance between them in a respective electrode pair, as well as the pairs themselves, the board correctly found that this type of circuit would be predictable in series and gave more than substantial evidence to do it, to do so. So turning to counsel's motivation to combine arguments, the obvious try also required a reason to try it. And the board expressly found that there would be a reason to try it here. Not that there could be, there would be. And the board identified several reasons. Again, the board relied on Kunis unequivocally suggesting wiring electrodes in series, and found that Kunis specifically taught that it would be advantageous to reduce the bulk of the cross-sectional profile of the catheter. Again, somebody looking at Hawkins 020 would look at it, and you've got to get the, not only does Hawkins 020 contain multiple embodiments, but you also have to get the device to the treatment site. And so the bulk and stiffness matter here, whether it's a device that's going into a heart valve or whether it's an angioplasty balloon going into something narrower. And the board recognized that. And that's at appendix 27 and 28. The board also recognized that Kunis, you know, generally links to catheters and such minimally invasive procedures at appendix 18. The board recognized that the petitioner demonstrated a series configuration would be less bulky, even if the same number of wires were used. That's appendix 28. And counsel made an argument about an alleged inconsistency in Dr. Jensen's testimony, but Dr. Jensen says, well, in the drawing that he's referring to, I think you go from four wires to three wires and you reduce one wire. And counsel said that Jensen allegedly later admitted that you might not even reduce the wires at all. But the board found that there was other reasons, even if there were the same number of wires were used. For example, bending stiffness isn't linear. The board also found in appendix 28-29 that it would be obvious to try Hawkins 020's electrical pairs in a series connection for increased patient safety. And as we noted in the red brief page 45, note 18, there was a lot of argument in the petition relating that the series connection would also permit a device to cover a greater length target area. That was never rebutted by a patent owner at all.
Anything further, Mr. Nelson?
Yeah, let me touch just briefly on the motivation to combine the multiple references issue. So Hawkins 020 incorporates Hawkins 768, the provisional application of it, by reference. So to the extent that there's motivation to combine needed between Hawkins 020 and Hawkins 768, it's already part of Hawkins 020. But turning to the dependent claims in particular here, the board noted that it adopted petitioner's reasons expressed above as our own, which would include all the reasoning that went into the finding of the independent claim from which the dependent claim depends, obviously. The board also found substantial evidence with respect to, I'll take claim 7 as an example, that Hawkins 020 and Hawkins 768 each describe a single-chamber balloon that's adapted for angioplasty. That's a factual finding at Appendix 41 and 4748 with respect to Claim 13. The board then refers to the reasons it adopts them as their own. The board also at Appendix 31 talks about Hawkins 020 expressly referring to the 170 provisional, which is the provisional that supports Hawkins 768, as a source of guidance for how to generate shockwaves using electrodes. And so these references, Hawkins 020 and Hawkins 768, they are medical devices, again, that are minimally invasive, used to treat calcification of heart valves, arteries. Kunis 768 is a similar device, or I'm sorry, the Kunis reference is a similar device that is also used to treat medical conditions, also inserted through the vasculature. There is motivation to combine here. The board also found that found expectation of success. And I think with that, I'm almost out of time, so I would just again thank the court for its time and submit that based on the arguments and the arguments in the red brief and all of the evidence cited therein, that the board should affirm, the court should affirm the board's decision in total. And I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. McPhee, you've got some rebuttal time left.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, let me supply the site that I promised that I didn't quite have at my fingertips. Appendix 27 is where the court found a passage from Kunis. They said, quote, unequivocally suggests electrically wiring electrodes in series. And the board goes on that page to find that Kunis discloses a series connection that's simply not correct under a proper interpretation of series connection, which contemplates at a minimum multiple arcing pairs of electrodes. And so the board just missed that issue. On the motivation to combine, again, we have the problem where the board seems to assume knowledge of the answer to the problem as a way of getting to the reference. Kunis, of course, as an ablation reference, it's designed to scar tissue. It's designed to cause lesions. The idea that someone starting from Hawkins 020, which is trying to avoid lesions, would look to Kunis, CSI never explains how we get there. They supply conclusory expert statements, and the same issue of could versus should, which under this court's precedent in touch is simply inadequate to support a motivation to combine. CSI's counsel just mentioned just now other potential reasons to combine with Kunis, but again, there was no actual evidence, for example, of a safety benefit. You look at the passage from the expert declaration, it's simply a paragraph saying everyone knows this could provide some additional safety. There's no contemporaneous evidence. There's no prior art citation. It's just hindsight from an expert who's using the patent to come up with the answer to a question. I'll point out, too, there was no evidence of motivation to combine, motivation to combine or expectation of success. For example, we don't see any evidence in the prior art cited by CSI or the board on the concept of using the differential electrode sizes as a way of enabling this use of multiple electrode pairs that arc in a common fluid. The first indication, the first disclosure that we see of that idea is in our patent, the 673 patent. And so you have to establish the expectation of success with some sort of evidence, and the board simply failed to do that. Finally, on the issue of combining multiple references, I think it's striking that neither in CSI's brief nor in the argument just now do we get any response to our point on the legal error, the failure to comply with this court's precedent in N. Ray Stepan. It's not enough, even assuming that CSI is right, that somehow various pieces of this combination, various embodiments were incorporated by reference into Hawkins 020. Even assuming that that were somehow the case, CSI is still obligated to show why you would be motivated to combine those distinct embodiments and that there would be some expectation of success. CSI starts from the premise that they don't have to show that because they believe that those embodiments were in the same reference, and that's simply contrary to law. And again, you see this all the more acutely with the dependent claims. There's no explanation of why the person of ordinary skill in the art would start with Figure 3 of Hawkins 020 and choose to rewire it according to the ablation system of Kunis and choose to introduce a parabolic reflector as in Hawkins 768 and choose to convert the entire thing into an angioplasty system or to transform it to an over-the-wire design. There's just no rationale suggesting or driving this convoluted sequence of modifications. The only rationale is the one that's not permitted here, namely hindsight. So I think then that point does apply to the independent claims, but it applies with even greater force, I'd say, to the dependent claims of this patent. And so, Your Honor, we believe that for this reason and for the multiple independent reasons that we set forth, that the board's decision should be reversed.
Hearing no further questions from the panel, we thank both sides, and the case is submitted.